We're here at the closing days of Gen Con 2009. Here with Keith Baker, creator of Eberron. How are you doing today?
I'm doing okay. Been a long weekend, but been a good one.
Long weekend for a lot of people here, I'm sure. So the Eberron campaign guide just came out. That was in the past month or two. That was the big campaign setting for the year with Wizards One Setting thing.
Indeed. 2009, the year of Eberron.
The year of Eberron. You own the next 4 months at the very least.
I'm hoping this is going to be something like the Chinese calendar, and then 12 years from now it'll be the next year
gonna
of
rewrap.
Eberron.
Yeah, exactly. That can be like 5th or 6th edition Eberron. Or maybe it'll just become an evergreen product. They just want Eberron every year in August. So how long before did you know that it was going to be Eberron? How much ramp
for 2009? Pretty early on. I mean, basically, it takes quite a long lead time for a Wizards to put out a product. So yeah, I was working on this in 2008. I pretty much knew it was going to be the setting after after Forgotten Realms.
So you had some time to conceptually come
Absolutely.
Up with what you wanted to do.
Well, I started working on my house rules for Eberron, sort of as soon as 4th edition came out, just to at least start saying, because among other things, I'm running it, I'm going to run Eberron.
Right.
And not everything that I did is how it ended up being in 4th edition, but in some cases that's because it was better, I was doing something very different on Dragon Marks, but I actually like the mechanics the way they ended up.
Cool. So. Yeah, I think that's been one of the more controversial changes, but
there's things about it. It's all in how you look at it.
Mm-hmm.
So first, there's the whole issue of allowing out of race marks, and that's sort of up to the thing. The important thing to me is that the book clearly states that for the setting, the marks are generally attached to these races, that player characters can be an exception, but that's something, between player and DM.
Right.
But that they are the exception, and that the world remains the same, and that's the important thing to me. And that, hey, if you want to lift them for Forgotten Realms or Dark Sun or whatever, well, then there's no reason that the mark of scribing should be for gnomes, but for Eberron it is.
Right.
And so that's the important issue to me. The other issue is the only a single feat instead of multiple feats.
Right.
To me, that works because the power enhances all of your powers. So it's not like in 3rd edition where, when you get the least mark, it's cure light wounds. When you get the lesser mark, it's cure moderate wounds.
You have to build your way up.
Instead, it's, if you heal, you heal better. When you cast cure moderate wounds, it's better because of your mark. And so to me, the way I see that in my mind is that they're all coming from the mark. They're all flowing through the mark. You just don't need another feat to reflect that. Which makes it also much easier for a character to have a mark without it being a huge burden on sapping away all your feats to do something which, in many ways, is a sort of story.
It's not like a story tax on
how
likely you might be.
Exactly.
How about adjusting some of the things from 4th edition that were introduced, like the different races?
With the races, I'm pretty happy with how we got them in there. Because sort of my goal is, if you're playing a 3rd edition game and you want to switch to 4th, you shouldn't have to basically throw out your campaign to do it. And so in some cases, I don't think the player's guide really gets across sort of the story potential of some of the ideas. So, like, the Dragonborn are a good example, where they're intentionally somewhat in the shadows. Well, they're largely in Kabara, where there's always been lizard folk, and it just happened, people didn't realize, humans can't tell the difference between lizard folk and Dragonborn, and they were always there. It doesn't change. It's not like, there's a huge Dragonborn district in Sharn that you've just never noticed, if you see what I'm saying. Or there's a Dragonborn Dragonmark house, and we've never noticed. We've always had lizards in Kabara, and now it turns out some of them were Dragonborn. The main thing is it just kind of says, oh yeah, they had some old civilization and it fell. And actually, I think there's a lot of interesting story potential there of, well, they were brought over to help defend Hakatorvak, the city that Rashak is there, and they sort of basically got bored, spread out, starting a kingdom over to the west, and then that, first off, they got their asses kicked by the Dakani, and then something happened because they were there to protect Hakatorvak and they didn't. It, you know, Rashak is corrupted. They aren't there anymore. So to me, I see a very interesting story in there of what happened. You know, was it the Daukir? Was it the Overlord's corruption? But that, in my opinion, the story of the Dragonborn is they had a duty that they were there for, and because of their ambition, because of their desire to move away, they failed. And that their, I see a sort of bitter fight against sort of corrupted Dragonborn in the past, and you know, some interesting stuff can be done there. So that's something I hope to explore in the future. The Eladrin, likewise, the story comes out much more clearly in the campaign guide than it does in the player's guide. But the whole point is, it's adding them in a way that they've always been there, but in a very secretive, in the shadows, right, fairy tale way. And now suddenly they're suddenly thrust out into the light and saying, oh crap, you right. know, ignore the tower behind the curtain, you know. And to me, with each tower having its own stories, its own views, there's a lot of, again, well, what type of Eladrin do you want to play? Do you want to be the cold, martial warlord? Well, then come from the Winter Citadel. Do you want to be the carefree bard? Well, then come from, you know, Pylos Imperial. You know, that depending where you are, and then each one has their own problems, too.
Right.
So I'm very happy with that, because like I said, it puts them in the world with an interesting story, but without radically changing the world on, you know, to squeeze them in.
Right. And while classes are sort of a more behind the screen sort of concept as far as the story goes, it's still, you know, the new class to 4th edition, do you find that...
The whole thing to me is I find that people are often too caught up on the fluff of classes than I personally would be. So, like, the big thing to me is the example of saying, well, I don't know how we can play Kalishtar because we don't have psionic classes. And the thing to me is saying, so, okay, play a Kalishtar shaman. Because, hey, they got a wisdom bonus, they're right. good for that, who, instead of summoning natural spirits, he's pulling your nightmares out and attacking you with them. And
that's very
mechanically,
scary.
Mechanically, it works perfectly. Kalishtar have a wisdom bonus. There's no reason, nothing says it has to be a tiger. There's no reason it can't be a crazy nightmare spirit. And all it takes is for you and your DM to agree, hey, let's change the thing. And what I do for that is house rule that instead of nature as their automatic trained skill, intimidate is their automatic trained skill. So I know what evil heart lurks in the hearts of men, and I attack you with it. And so that kind of thing, if you look at the classes from a little more of a loose perspective of what these are, is a mechanical thing. I played an Avenger in a recent game where it wasn't that I was divine in any sense. What I was someone, so I was a Deva Avenger mechanically, but the way it was that I was a human farm boy who basically had survived the morning and was now infused with thousands of spirits of the morning. And so my divine faith, you know, my shield of faith wasn't a shield of faith. It was a shield of sort of swirling mists of these spirits of the, you know, the people trapped from the morning that would, like, deflect blows. I was out to avenge things, obviously, you know, so on and so forth. And as a Deva, it was that my memories of a thousand lives were memories of a thousand lives, just not mine, you know. And, again, necrotic resistance because I've already got a lot of ghosts in there and they're going to keep your ones out. So it's that kind of thing of saying, just because the Avenger is a divine class that is specifically described as serving the gods, could be, or it could be something else.
Right.
And for me, with Eberron, between the races, between the story, you know, doing something with the morning, I had a Infernal Warlock someone played who they did House of Mirandar and just said, well, let's make your Infernal Pact, you know, in quotations, actually a pact with the storm. And this was before the Storm Sorcerer was out, of course. And just changed all everything that was fire to lightning, and everything was gold to thunder, and boom, you have, you know, Million Dollar Warlock. Now you got the Storm Sorcerer, which works fine, but I mean, I'm just saying, you know, you can do that sort of thing. You know, don't feel, if you've got a class that just doesn't quite fit or something, well, usually with a little twist or two, you can make it fit. So...
Cool. Well, what do you think about the rules in general of 4th edition? Is it fit for Eberron, for that synthetic feel?
So, the key thing to me is that, as a designer, I think both 3rd and 4th have strengths. I think that they are different games. Mm-hmm. And so what bothers me is when I hear someone say, well, 4th edition isn't D&D. And I'm like, yes, I remember people saying the exact same thing about 3rd edition. You know, it is not 3rd edition. It is a different version of D&D. So I like them, you know, I like them both. I like 4th edition. I think that the more fluid nature of skill use is something that plays very well to intrigue-based games, and also the fact that there's a greater emphasis on non-combat challenges being a way to advance, getting new experience and things like that. I like the fact that I could run an inquisitive game in Sharn, not even have combat in it. It's very easy to make characters who have, you know, through skill training, through multi-class feats, who have non-combat capabilities. So, you know, to make a fighter who actually has, you know, streetwise heal and insight and is actually a pretty good, you know, has something to add to an inquisitive campaign. And, you know, might never actually have a fight and you can still go up a level. I mean, sure. I like that sort of flavor. And as for the combat, it's very much that it's about, you have to look at it the right way. For me, it is about the cinematic flavor. So it's trying to be cinematic versus trying to be realistic. That tripping is a perfect example. That you can say, if I know how to trip someone, if I'm trained in martial arts, and I know how to trip you, there's nothing stopping me. When you stand up, I could trip you again. So why can't I do that in 4th edition? I've got a move that is knock you down and trip you, and I just can't do it again. What's that about? In 3rd edition, I can do that. And if that's important to me, I can make my character who's all about tripping, and I can trip you all combat long. And if that's important to you, great. The way I look at it is, in a Jackie Chan movie, he doesn't do the same move right. over and over and over and over and over again. He does something cool, then he does something else cool, then he does something else cool. And that's what encounter powers are to me. Is that the reason I don't trip you over and over and over again is because, well, that's boring. And so for me, that works perfectly. Yeah, and that's the thing. It's totally about how you approach it. And so I like the cinema, you know, the sort of simpler, faster-paced thing. But I also totally understand why, for a different style of play, people prefer third. I really don't like saying one is better than the other. I like saying they are better for different different styles of play.
And people are still clearly using Eberron in both and in other systems too. Yeah.
I mean, that's the point. I like 4th edition. I'm playing 4th edition. But I'm not ever going to tell anyone that, oh, they shouldn't be doing something else, and I don't like it when people say that I shouldn't be doing something else. You know, do what you enjoy playing.
So do you have anything in the hopper that you can talk about? Anything on the way that we can go for?
So I'm talking with a D&D insider right now about... doing a monthly column for them that will be Eberron related. So length, format, etc. will remains to be seen, but there is going to be you know, Eberron support from me in DDI in months to come. I also have, in November, The Son of Kyber comes out. That's the second book in the Thorn of Brainland series, which began with Queen of Stone, which is out already. And I'm very happy with that. I think it's a series that really highlights a lot of the sort of interesting aspects of Eberron. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that I enjoy. So, other than that, at the moment I've mainly just been traveling around the world, which if you go to bossythecow.com, you can see what that's all about and if I'm coming through your area. But I've been traveling around running Eberron all over the world. And that's been very interesting, but hasn't left me as much time as it might to do a whole lot of game design.
But still very cool to be traveling around.
Oh, fascinating, and just extremely interesting to sort of, you know, who knew people were playing Eberron in Croatia or, you know, Slovakia. So I've had a fabulous time. I've met a lot of really interesting people and rolled a whole lot of dice.
Excellent. Well, good luck on your travels, sir, and thanks for talking with us today.
Thank you very much.